everybody. Welcome to Let's Talk Melrose. Melrose, my name is Sam Hammer.
I'm Tom Shampoo.
And I'm Steve Cazella.
Oh, my God.
All right. Look at this. This is not a repeat show, everybody. This is live. Steve Cazella is in the house with us.
Yes. Our regrets from Tom, Catalini, and Jen. They are busy doing things that are less important but more timely. But you know what, Steve, thank you for coming on tonight, because this is a show where Melrosians talk to Melrosians about Melrose, and we're going to learn a lot and fill you in on a lot of things that are going on in town. But tonight, anything can happen if you let it, Melrose. We're going to be talking about the arts in town. So we're going to get right into it. Do you have this song lined up? Something grabs a hold of me tightly. Is that what you? Yeah, I see.
Me?
Yeah.
No, I did not write that. Wait a minute. We're all of a sudden we're off track. See?
Just said, "Look who's back." So I thought maybe a little bit of Vanilla Ice reference there would be good.
Did you do that?
But no, I don't have the song queued up.
Well, that's I think you should just sing it. But water, water everywhere.
Yes. That's all about what I saw for the last 3-4 days with these pictures on various social media channels of certain people. Some are here and some are not here, splashing around the water all weekend. How fun was that? Sam and Jen LeClaire were out of the zip code enjoying vacation time.
We were. It was fun. We crashed the Dugan's family vacation. Thanks. And sorry. It was
sorry,
fun.
Not sorry.
Sorry, not sorry. We got a boat ride by Dennis Sampson. It was great. We were in Winnipesaukee, which I've never I spent some time there, but not enough. It was awesome. And I still have vacation brain. So we're going to see how the show goes. But Tom, something big happened with you this week as well.
Yes, I got to watch you guys go on vacation. That was big.
I actually don't know anything about the whole Winnipesaukee vacation thing. I'm embarrassed to say that even though we've lived in Massachusetts for a number of years now, we've actually never been up there.
So this is a great point, Steve, because there are lake people and there are ocean people I've discovered in my life. That's sort of a divide, kind of like sailors and a motorboat, right? So it's like a big divide. But anyway,
we're actually more like mountain people, to be honest. The mountains in southern New Hampshire is more where we tend to hang out.
The farther away you can get from the land and sea, the better you guys are.
I grew up in New Hampshire, and I've only been to Lake Winnipesaukee probably 3 times in my life. Hmm. So I'm with you. I don't know a lot about it, but people love it. Yeah. I know the folks who are up there now love it as well, and so hope having a good time.
It's nice. It's very clear. Like you could see, I don't know, I'm, let's say, practically 5 feet, 10 inches. And you could see all the way down past that. So
that's a segue into how we couldn't necessarily see. I love that segue. Yep. So I'll answer your question from a few minutes ago, which is that I have a new job. I started this week. I'm working for an organization called Health Effects Institute. It's a nonprofit in Boston. They produce scientific research on air pollution and the effects on global health. And as it happens, my first week, we have all this smoke that's been coming across the entire length of the United States, 3,000 plus miles, from 85 or 88 wildfires in California, Oregon, Washington State. That's quite a story in itself. I think it was really weird to come out. I was in town yesterday, Monday, in Boston at the office, but everywhere across all of Massachusetts and parts of New England, it wasn't just that you could see the haze and see the smoke, but it had a really strong smell to it as well.
How would you describe it for those who?
Well, for those that didn't smell it, it smelled like a woody, kind of a earthy almost smell to me, at least. It was very pungent and stinging, I think, to the nose. To me, it was. And we went out to take my mother-in-law out for dinner last night, and the restaurant, it was a 99 up in Stoneham. They had no outdoor seating because of the smoke. So they had closed their outdoor patio because it was really bad. And it is bad for you. It's bad bad health risks for people who are especially suffering from that. So anyway, and the end of my PSA. But interesting piece of news this week on that. So
the DEP that the state DEP Department of Environmental Protection, you know, confirmed that there was the air quality alert on Twitter. But for those of us who don't really know what that means, I mean, it does smell bad. It does feel like it's probably not good for us. But like, what is it actually? How concerned should we actually be about that?
I'm not a scientist, so I'm not going to pretend like I have the answer. I do know that the air quality yesterday was worse and it reached higher levels. But today it was moderate. It wasn't severe. So it wasn't a chronic issue, or it wasn't an issue for folks with chronic health issues, especially respiratory issues. So it's getting better. So I think, you know, every day we'll have to watch and see. The smoke is literally coming across the country. And so there are times when it's worse and times when it's not so bad, depending on what the jet stream is doing that's carrying all that smoke over here.
And you've only been on the job 2 days, and you just gave us a lesson on this. Thank you. It was perfect timing.
I know, huh?
So this is where Catalini would play his news intro. So we're not going to really pretend. But since we last got together, Steve, I don't know if you're following along with the library renovation project.
With interest, probably not as closely as others, but certainly just as a user of the library and somebody who's certainly taken note of all the issues that the restoration is supposed to correct. You know, I've definitely gotten lost looking for certain sections and, you know, just wished that the library seemed more capable of holding all the things that Melrose wants it to. So I am thrilled that it's going to happen. But it sounds like there's been an update that the Board of Trustees took some action this week.
They did. They had a vote last week that they would dedicate $2 million of their fund, which is essentially endowments, so towards the renovation project. So that will lower the price tag. It will help ease the burden on the city and for financing the project. And also last week, we had a little bit of a fact check blunder where it was potentially going to be considered a debt exclusion. That is not the case. This is a bond allocation or bond appropriation. So basically what we borrow with our amazing credit rating, we can repay without having to necessarily, we can repay within our means of our annual budget. So
And that's what it is. I take the allocation of the $2 million from the Board of Trustees as a show of good faith that we're committed to this and we want this to happen. The $8 million grant that's coming our way is terrific, and there's $2 million on top of that to help. So I do agree that it's, you know, helping to ease the burden for the city is fantastic, and I hope that people see it that same way.
So we met with on Friday. We also had coffee with, if you're following us on Facebook, Margot Fleischman, who is the city's new, essentially, chief of staff, who is, Steve, I don't know if you heard this either. We have a new strategic initiatives chief of staff.
I follow everything you post on Facebook, Sam. Every picture, every word.
Right, hanging on Sam's posts.
So Margot Fleischman is her name, and she's been a Bedford Select Board member for over 10 years. So she's had to put financial packages together with her finance committee and budgets, and she's a real municipal finance person. I mean, she's amazing at articulating kind of like what this is all about. So she's committed to coming on the show. So we'll have her come on, and we're going to ask some questions about how this fits into like the larger plan for our capital investment.
Right.
So you should definitely watch that one, Steve.
Oh my God. And she was impressive. It was great to have a coffee with her last Friday. And she was very impressive, like just her knowledge and her ability to navigate the whole process of any kind of a city fiscal question.
I thought you were going to say she was impressive on how she navigated Tom Catalini's rapid fire.
Oh, my. That should have been the show.
Yeah,
he's a special talent.
Yeah, he is a special talent. You're right. So I'm anxious to see her on the show and have a chance to ask her more questions.
Yeah, but this Friday.
What's summer stroll this Friday.
What it says in the script. It's summer stroll. Friday at 6 p.m.
Tom, you've been there a few times.
Take it away.
I've been there. I love it. I think it's fantastic. I feel like it's one of those evenings that just, if the weather's nice, it's just sort of that moment where you walk around the city, you walk around Main Street. And I felt like I love my community. I love feeling that I belong here, and walking through Main Street that's closed and the restaurants are spilled out onto the sidewalks and the streets, feels like we're doing something for each other, with each other. And we should do more of this. I love closing the street down. I love having dinner on the street. I love seeing people in that environment to just enjoy the night and have a fun time and feel like you belong to a kind of a great community. So that's how I feel. I know others may feel differently, but that's
Do you have any pro tips? I hear like the lines can get long in certain places. Eat before dessert down there.
I don't have any pro tips. I mean, half it's like luck. Just show up, and if there's not a line, you know. But I'll say this. I think it was because we didn't have one last year. So 2 years ago, I think we got to Giacomo's and put our name in at like 6:30. And there was an hour and a half wait. But we got a table, but it took an hour and a half to get a table. But maybe put your name in like two or three places, and then you can cancel afterwards.
Sounds like a tease.
You didn't hear that from me.
Yeah, no, don't do that.
That's not that's a horrible idea. Who thought of that? That's a terrible idea.
All of our outdoor events in Melrose are awesome, though. Like, we have a great Main Street. It's, you know, the Victorian Fair is great. Home for the Holidays is great. Summer Stroll is great. All that stuff is good. So definitely come out on Friday and check it out.
Yeah. And so, Steve, have you been to Summer Stroll with the
Yes.
kids? Without the kids? Has it been...
I think with the kids the last couple of years that we never actually went and did, you know, went out for dinner or anything, just because as any parent of small children knows, that's a whole other scene. And right. sometimes it's not as relaxing as you imagine it, as you know, imagine it ahead of time. It's like, well, let's just go out tonight and take it easy. And that's just not how it actually turns out. Right. But definitely it's just nice to get out and kind of see, especially now when there's so many people we haven't seen in a long time, just to be able to kind of run into people, you know. Yeah. that's a special treat. So this Friday, definitely going to check it out.
Oh, nice. So we have a fall stroll for the parents of smaller kids in October, which is Halloween. We close, right? You just
not, the long angle. Also not relaxing,
not a stroll,
strolling.
Not a stroll at all, right?
Scurrying and chaos.
Right. Keep your kids from getting run over by cars and like eating a whole bag of Snickers before you can stop them.
Fueled by chocolate.
Oh my God. Awesome. Yeah. Well, one thing that I'm super excited about, I'm putting your lyrics, Vanilla Ice lyrics, in here, because Steve, we're so happy you came this week. In a few moments, we're going to bring on Adam Schuler with the Broken Leg Productions. But as soon as we booked, you were coming on, and then Adam said yes. And then I remembered you had another podcast you were doing. this one. And it's new. So you usually have usually do the horse race about Massachusetts politics, but you kind of did a reboot. You did a mass reboot for a summer series. What is that all about?
Yeah, Mass Reboot is the series that the group that was making the horse race took a break from the horse race for the summer and are making a podcast called Mass Reboot, which is about restarting Massachusetts after COVID with a special eye towards what's been lost along the way. So we're looking at different pieces of Massachusetts society. We've done episodes already on art, which is what we're talking about today. We've done episodes on home, transportation, food, and one other that has already escaped me. It'll come to me. And we have an episode coming tomorrow on work. So we're kind of looking at big topics, sort of what changed, what happened during COVID, what changed, and where we go from here.
Yeah. And so it's not just what's lost financially, but what's lost culturally, what's lost and all the different layers of the things that we're going through. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, some, for example, you know, the food episode, we in Massachusetts lost over 3,000 restaurants during COVID.
You know, not to come back. Instance. Right. Not to
some
come
of
back.
Them. Some of them have, some of them may, but 3,000 seems to be sort of the steady number. Like somewhere in that range is what's just gone. It, you know, maybe some new version of it might reopen, but has not yet, and there's no plans. You know, and that's even before looking at what the Delta variant might do and kind of what new shutdowns might do. So in terms of what's been lost, that's kind of what we mean. You know, with arts, for example, it's not necessarily institutions, though certainly we did lose many institutions, but it's also just artists, you know, people who were employed in the arts in some way, whether it was creating on their own or, you know, on crews and so forth. You know, thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people lost their jobs, and some of those people are not coming back. So definitely a lot has been lost.
Yeah. So what I learned, Michael Bobbitt from the Mass Cultural Council was on your show, and he talked about that we were already kind of experiencing a cultural depression, and this just exacerbated things, that the arts and the business models of the arts and the community itself have already been vulnerable at best. And then he mentioned that they did a survey last year to this year, and that around 50% of the jobs in the arts and culture industry have disappeared in the last year, are gone.
That's statewide?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he makes the point too, that it's even hard to measure precisely what the impact is, because it's, as he puts it, it's so vast, you know, because it's the arts organizations, you know, some of them will come back to life and may have come back to life even in the last couple of weeks and months. However, you know, the impact of, if you're going out to see a show, you might spend $40 extra on things like, you know, a new shirt that you got for that, and maybe a dinner or a drink or something like that. So all the institutions that are around the art place that you might go out to are also losing out. You know, so it's the impact both immediately on the artists, then on all the crews and staff, and then on all of the secondary spending that the arts actually supports.
Sorry, yeah. I am very much listening to my dog just chewed through two of my shoes.
Oh, look at that.
They were just delivered.
Wow. Happy that was quick.
That's him.
Two different pairs. I guess he likes lefts.
Oh, wow.
So I have all kinds of questions, but I'm wondering, like I feel like maybe Adam has some answers for us too, but I'm intrigued by this, because I'm wondering about that. The optimist in me is wondering, when we get back to some form of what used to be our lives, the normal everyday life, do we see a rebound because people are anxious to get back to a theater? Or do we feel like people are going to say, you know what, it's just not worth it anymore, so let's just not go? And I hate to feel like it's the second or the latter, but I wonder about that.
I mean, Steve did a poll.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you go. If only we had someone who knew this stuff.
Yeah.
I heard that 44% of those polled feel that it's safe to go back, and that a lot of the community that maybe doesn't feel safe are older populations, who generally are those who support the arts in more densely. So,
yeah, there's a kind of a couple things worth touching on there. One is that it depends on the type of arts organization you're talking about, because it was much easier and much more comfortable for instance, museums to reopen. You know, there, if the gallery is large, particularly, you know, if it's the MFA, then you can reopen and people can kind of keep their distance if they prefer, you know, and you're not sitting, you know, literally like 14 inches away from somebody for 2 hours at a time, you know, like you would be if it's a theater. And the other thing is that, or several other things, is that to reopen a theater takes a really, really long time. You know, that's one of the points that Joe Spalding of the Box Center, who we talked to for the podcast, made, is you don't just decide to reopen and turn the lights on and there is a live show ready to go. You know, there's months and months and months of preparation, you know, of, in his case, it's touring productions, even not even ones necessarily that started there. So it's a show that's been created somewhere, that they have hired the actors, they've hired the musicians, they've rehearsed the actors and the musicians, they've built the set, they've, you know, hired all the staff for behind, you know, for in the house and so forth. And only then does the tour begin and eventually end up in Boston. So
right.
It was October was when they were anticipating kind of live theater starting up again for them.
So the criticism that we were expressing earlier about his particular comments was that he has to have 100%. You have to be at 100% in order to reopen. And there was a little bit of a commentary on pushing back on if your donors and your, you know, those that are really contributing to your organization, you can't be so rigid. You have to be nimble. And so what I'd like to do is introduce our guest tonight who did exactly that. Thank you. During this pandemic. And so welcome, Adam, to the show from Broken Leg Productions.
Adam Schuler.
Hi.
Hey, Adam.
Thank you for having me.
So as a, you have a small organization, right? Broken Leg Productions. It's a, it's a nonprofit. Is that correct?
We're working on our nonprofit status now. So
awesome. Okay.
But Sam, before you go on with that, we have to address the elephant in the room. Muskets. Yes. Look at the muskets back there, man. Wait, muskets and like a wedding dress or something, right? That's fantastic.
So this is our two of our upcoming shows. We're doing Les Mis in a few weeks, and the muskets will be featured in Les Mis. And the white gown behind me is Cinderella's ball gown in Cinderella. Oh, okay.
Or a shotgun wedding, either
glass
way.
Glass slippers over here.
Nice.
Can I borrow them? I need to... Tell me they're an 8.5 or
Teddy Magic.
Meant to be. It's a matching foot. Sorry, Sam. I just wanted to
it was literally I couldn't avoid it. So we're fans of the productions that you put on. And last year at this time you had to pivot quite a bit in your model.
Absolutely. Yeah. So this past year and a half has been such a journey for us, starting an early lockdown with shutting down productions and canceling shows left and right, which was just bleeding cash for us and bleeding capital. And then, unlike most organizations, we have found a way to kind of thread the needle. Over the course of the past year and a half, we've put on 11 productions during the pandemic safely with no children, student casualties or anything. And that's been a very difficult thing that's had me. I'm in my 30s. I've been out of college for years and years, and I've gotten more training in the past year in things that I never thought I would have to learn. In the past year, we've been recording all the students' vocals and they've been lip syncing to them in performance while masked and socially distanced. So it definitely has a different feel to it than how it would normally be, but that's how we've made it through. And having our doors remain open for our students has been a lighthouse in this pandemic, and some sense of normalcy and some sense of hope for them. And I just remember the first days back in COVID land when we were just bringing the students back for the first time, and how deflated they were, and how the arts rebuilt them. And we see that more and more as we are able to get back to live singing and live audiences. And that's been such a thrill this summer. But it's definitely been a whole whirlwind situation, and there's more about videography that I never thought I'd learn as a live theater artist that I've had to learn in order to live stream these productions. But we've been getting through barely. But as you're saying, these arts organizations are hanging by the skin of our teeth, and that's where we're at. We've made it through what we hope is the bulk of the beast, and but now we're hobbling along on one leg. We've been operating at 1/3 income for about a year and a half, and mind you, we're a small arts organization, so the income before this was not a gargantuan sum, but we're now getting to a point where we can't sustain anymore on 1/3 income, and we've built this whole summer season with these huge shows to welcome back live audiences and get audiences back, and we're seeing that to mixed results. We are definitely seeing much smaller numbers than in the past, and the numbers aren't coming back in the way that we hoped for this summer. And as an arts organization, I can say that all arts organizations are starting to get worried that now that we're in an eye of a storm or at the end of a storm, who knows? But we're all worried because we don't know what's next.
So and, if you were, hard oh, sorry, to go ahead.
It's just hard to sustain, and especially right. with the not knowing what's next.
So I was going to ask if you were to do a needs assessment of where you are right now, would you say, I mean, some of these things are obviously intertwined between you, if you had to prioritize audience, volunteers and staff, venues, not only rehearsal venues, but also performance venues, marketing, fundraising. Sure.
It's such a complicated web. I think right now we've been at the Melrose Performing Arts Center this summer, which is a beautiful 900 seat auditorium. And that's kind of where we needed to be this summer in order to welcome back audiences in a way that we felt comfortable with so that they could socially distance. That being said, we had no thought in mind that we were going to have 900 people in an audience. So, but we were hoping for more than we've been getting. So I think the biggest need that we have is just the return of audiences and even just donations to arts organizations. We have a donation tab at www.brokenlegproductions.com. But those donations are helping us stay alive. And I know so many arts organizations had to go to a more virtual platform, and so many people got zoomed out, and they were so sick of Zoom, between the students zooming all day in school or work, and then to have arts organizations be like, come see our Zoom cabaret or what have you, and the audiences weren't really coming to those Zoom productions of ours, and now they're not coming back in droves quite yet, which is understandable. But also, if we don't see audiences starting to come back, then there's going to be nothing for them to come back to soon.
Oh,
I know. Ouch.
So looking ahead in the summer, you know, a lot of us are kind of wondering what for a while it felt like infections were going in one direction and that we were all kind of looking forward to reopening everything. And we were all, you know, doing everything in person again. And now just in the last week or two, it doesn't feel like that suddenly anymore. So I'm wondering from your vantage point, what that looks like and how you're thinking about managing sort of what's happening right now and what's coming.
So, I mean, we're just like everyone else. We have flung open the doors this summer, and it's been a slow and cautious reversal of all these procedures we've put up and all these walls. And we've started having live singing in rehearsals again, which is just such a heart-filling experience, and to welcome back live audiences. And last summer we were live streaming things, so we had like parents do notes to their child and we post that on the wall, and that's what the kids would perform to. But it's so much more endearing to have the actual parents there. And so now seeing that there might be another wave coming, it definitely makes us nervous, and we'll stem that tide as best we can. We've had a bit of a cold going around the cast this week, so we've remasked for the week to kind of stem that tide. And we do have a lot of policies and procedures in place, and have blatantly said that if things change, we may rescind live audiences. We may make the children wear masks in performance. We may go back to the pre-recorded vocal. But again, at this point, we're so beaten down, and this is such a, it's been such a rough year for everyone in the world, but it's been so much work this past year with so little financial reward, and the emotional reward of being that beacon for kids is obviously so fulfilling, but operating at 1/3 income is not sustainable. And so if another wave comes, I think you're going to see a lot more arts organizations start to fold. And I know that Broken Leg can't go on too much further. Like I was saying, we're in this big venue this summer. To be there costs exorbitantly more money, which thanks Peter, which rightfully so. It's a beautiful facility. You have to pay the custodial fees to be there. It's part of the school system. I do also work with the Melrose Public Schools, and they're not taking advantage of us in any way. They're giving us the best deal possible, but that is, yeah, it's a huge, the thing people think of when they think of a community theater is Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney in a barn putting on a show, and that's not quite what it is. To put on a show, you have the rights and royalties to just perform that show cost anywhere between $3,000 and $7,000 per production. And then on top of that, we're looking at about in the neighborhood of $5,000 to be in a beautiful facility like the Melrose Performing Arts Center. And then I have a staff I have to pay. That's another huge chunk of change. So each production is an exorbitant expense. And so to operate at a third of that is impossible for too long.
So before the show, we were talking about government funding and support for some of the organizations. Steve, you mentioned there was a shuttered, what was it called?
Yeah, the Shuttered Venues Operator Grant. We heard from some of the arts organizations we talked to for the podcast that, for instance, PPP was not as helpful to many organizations because some of their staff weren't technically employees, for instance, or they were too small to have a formal banking relationship. And then the SVOG was difficult if you had a small staff to sit down in front of this weighty application when you were just trying to hang on. So we were just wondering sort of how the government assistance that was put out there reached you, or if it did reach you, or if it helped you in your particular circumstance.
It hasn't yet. I mean, we're still, this is our fifth summer. We're just coming out of our infancy, and we don't have a full support staff. We have a more individual production staff. So each production has its own staff of independent contractors that we bring in. But there hasn't been too much government assistance that's super appropriate for our organization, which has been a hardship in and of itself.
So. And one thing you had mentioned was the cost of using our public middle school building, our public auditorium. And not to try to tie two things together between government assistance and a public building. But it just seems that perhaps the cost of that might be either shared with other organizations or really, I don't know. I don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth if you got a great deal per day, but, if that, the venue itself, if that is a large expense, and again, it is a public building, then maybe we can.
It is a public building, and I think that's a burden of many arts organizations is trying to access these beautiful spaces for your production, and they are rightfully so expensive. The Melrose Performing Arts Center, for example, just went through a big rehab and has a whole new lighting system and sound system that are state of the art and beautiful and wonderful. I think that, and like I said, I don't feel that the fees have been ungenerous or something that has been something that isn't experienced by anyone who rents that facility. But I do think that there must be an easier way for arts organizations to have a facility to reach the community they're trying to reach. And the reason we are based out of Melrose is I love the community of Melrose. I've always felt that Melrose is such a supportive of the arts community, and that's such a gift and such a wonderful thing. And so this is where we want to be. This is the community we want to serve. And we've certainly seen the fruits of this labor through the community and the students that we're able to reach and impact. And so I think there has to be a citywide conversation about what is the place of the arts in Melrose. How can we effectively rally around that? And where's the venue for smaller arts organizations to have their voice? And that's the conversation I think that needs to happen.
I totally agree. Totally agree. Where do you live, by the way? How far are you?
I'm in Wakefield, so
wow.
just
away. So your drive is not long.
How many students do you have or actors and actresses, how many people do you have in the production at any given time or in the,
sure.
I guess I'm asking, is it a class or is it just a production, a single production each time you do it?
So we are production based. So a student will register for a production. And it depends on the show. It depends on the season. During the school year, our numbers are a little bit smaller. But in the summer season, we do 4 shows in the summer throughout the course of the summer. This summer, throughout those 4 shows, we have 70 students enrolled, many of whom are enrolled in multiple productions. We are a tuition-based program, so they do pay a fee to be in the show, but their tuition alone covers basically staffing and licensing, and then everything else is through ticket sales. So then when those ticket sales numbers aren't there, that's when we really start to see the red.
And Steve, it's incoming fifth graders, Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. for 4 weeks. And then you get a show out of it. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll take them. Send them down.
Well, Steve and I have kids in the same class. So I think we're going to recruit a lot of littles for you next year. Yeah. Awesome.
You've had 2 shows so far this summer, and there's 2 more coming up, correct?
There are. So earlier this summer, we had our high school college students put on Newsies, which was incredible. It's a really challenging show. They were tap dancing all over the place, tough music. They did brilliantly. And just this past weekend, we did Mary Poppins with our youth students. Featuring the Hamrick children, and
I know
they are relaxing. So that featured flying, and that's another huge expense that people wouldn't think of. And most people here were doing flying and think that I've hung up some ropes on a beam and are zipping kids up, but you have to get like the state of the art theatrical flying company in, and that's a huge expense. So, and that was with the hope of that would attract the more crowds and mixed results it has. And, but we need those audiences, guys. Come on back. Yeah.
So we got 2 more shows coming up. I'll just leave this banner flying high.
So we do have Les Mis coming up, which is amazing. The kids are actually in the other room singing along. They sound incredible. It's going to be a do not miss event. And we're closing out our summer season with Cinderella, which is going to just be completely magical. And we're also currently registering our fall programs. So check those out as well.
I would be remiss if I didn't also mention to those that are here with me and watching that there is a community show coming up of sound and music.
Yeah.
So I have my guitar and my soprano is getting brushed up as we speak.
Perfect.
Steve plays a viola and he would make an excellent, I haven't heard you sing though, Steve.
There's a reason for that. Pretty regularly that YouTube didn't exist yet when I was in high school and doing the musical Chess, because now there's no existing recording of me singing in that. And I'm just so relieved that that's the case.
No VHS. Can't come back
to haunt you. VHS.
Yeah.
No kidding. and then make copies for Christmas gifts for everybody.
I think we can find it. Well, is there anything else that we didn't ask you that we should know or?
I don't think so. I think I'm so grateful you guys have asked me to join you. And like you said, we have a community production of Sound Music coming up. We've just announced our whole upcoming season, which is very exciting. We do focus more on our educational programs, but we have done a few adult productions. And now we are getting back to the community productions, which will be open to everyone. And we hope to get a lot of community and members involved and put the community in community theater. So we're looking forward to that.
That'll be a lot of fun. Thank you for doing that. And we're super excited. We have been fans. Obviously, the Cerises are two doors down, and our first show was Les Mis in this community, and we were absolutely blown away. So I thank you for that. I'm so happy it's coming back. If anything happens and you need a stand in, I can go by, I go by Jean Valjean. but I think Kit Chicken would also would fight me for that.
All right. Well, we'll keep that in mind.
Always here. But thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. I know you're in the middle of rehearsing, and you do amazing things for our community, and there's no way we would let you fall through any cracks. So
thank you so much.
No broken legs. All broken legs.
All broken
legs. Thank you guys so much.
In a good way.
In a good way.
And thanks very much, Adam.
All right. So with that, I think we warned you how we end this show. I'm going to do my best to give me a thumbs up if it sounds okay. But basically, we're going to see you around town, Melrose. Is that good?
That sounds good.
Bring some jazz hands in now.